Oh my god.
Speak, cat. Speak. She refuses now. Sorry. What's up?
I just try to make her talk.
Go ahead. Rock and roll. We're on, dude.
I know. I'm just getting over your cat thing. Welcome to Mustard Mayonnaise. I am Matt.
I am Richard.
And we discuss things in the entertainment industry that capture our interest. And then sometimes we get those up the same week. Sometimes we don't.
Every once in a while. It's the rare week.
What are you going to do? I don't know. I don't have that much to talk about this week. But every time I say that, we end up...
I got a couple movies I saw.
Well, first up is Children of Men.
Yep. Did you get to see it?
I saw it last night.
Yep.
Good movie. As you know, you sent me an email saying it was awesome, so it's not like that was a surprise. Really enjoyed it. Certainly very good filmmaking. Really enjoyed every aspect of it. And despite the message, the end message, it was still depressing.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, anybody who's like Trent, I mean, the very end is supposedly slightly hopeful. Baloney. That's the most depressing movie ever made.
Agree that it's hopeful.
I agree too, but in the most minor key. It's like, oh, this one little thing, and it's like, clearly
they're doing that on purpose so that everyone interprets it differently. You're interpreting it as being slightly hopeful. I am trying to redeem the depression from the rest of the movie. I'm choosing to believe that it's more hopeful than you.
I thought it was a brilliant movie. I am not latching on to much hope. That movie was as complete of a dystopian, oppressive, gut-wrenching world as I've ever seen. I mean, as complete of a vision and as realistic feeling as a vision as I've ever seen, you know. And it's kind of funny, like I heard the director, you know, they spent like $70-80 million on this movie. They spent a lot of money, and as the director said, boy, we spent a lot of money to make this movie look cheap. And and I thought that was a good analogy, because it almost looked and felt like, to some extent, like 28 Days Later, which was shot on mini DV and one of those movies that looked kind of cheap, but clearly they spent a lot of money on this, especially as you get to some of these set pieces and look at how enormous they are and realize how much energy went into building them. I mean, it's just incredible. Mm-hmm. I was just truly blown away by that movie.
No, very, very good. You know, and we saw a 9:30 showing down at the Montlake 9. And about 5 minutes into it, you know, you can hear a kid screaming in the back row.
Ugh.
And, you know, my wife and I looking at each other like, and then we talked about it later. Why are you bringing your kid to a 9:30 Saturday showing of an R-rated movie? Why are you doing that? Why?
Because they're so used to just watching them on TV and they don't see any difference. It's not like the old days where you felt, wow, first of all, completely inappropriate.
Oh, yeah.
Second of all, it's just your kid's going to make noise, so you can't do it that way.
It's not like going to Night at the Museum where it's a family comedy and you'll get some kids in the audience. You expect that. But something like this, you know, that's like when I saw the 5-year-old at Fargo.
Oh, I remember seeing 5-year-olds at this guy that brought his 5-year-old to Saving Private Ryan, and they just could not shut up through the whole. And it was like, and that was a very emotional movie, and it was like I was so freaking angry looking over and this kid wandering around with the most horrific images at the beginning of that movie.
Unbelievable. And then I didn't tell you, when we saw The Good German Christmas Eve, which we saw at Pacific Place, which is a nice, expensive theater downtown Seattle.
Yeah, that's where we saw The Children of Men.
Yeah, that was because prior to this week, that's the only place it was showing.
Yeah.
But we had gone out to dinner beforehand, and so we were wearing nice clothes, and they've got the retractable armrests that hinge up and down. So I'm kind of fidgeting, and I've got my legs under that, and I realize, oh, look, someone's fresh gum is stuck under the armrest, and now it's on my nice dress pants.
Nice.
Fantastic. Gone through the washing machine 3 times. It still hasn't come out.
Nice.
So, and it's part of the whole, you know, every time you have a bad experience in a theater, you're like, why am I even coming to the theater? I've got a nice big screen at home. Why am I doing this? Why do I subject myself to the random BS of going to the movies. And, you know, every time I say that or try and cut down, I get sucked back in. Because there's a bunch of stuff coming out this year I'm going to want to see.
Well, once they, if they came up with a model that just, you know, and obviously at some point they're moving towards this model, but they release a movie and you can download it secure probably with DRM or whatever.
We'll see.
The day it comes out, I would have paid the same amount I paid for Children of Men, and I would have watched it on my big screen. Absolutely. Now, they're not going to do that anytime soon because it ruins all the economics. There's too much of a history of people going to movies then later selling it that way. But once they do that, I would absolutely have not driven to see Children of Men. Because my sound system is better than those theaters in the sense that I can tune it the way I want it, turn it up and down, and it sounds good. The video, the picture isn't going to be as good, but at some point, you know, you get even higher def. But
so anyway, what else did you see?
Well, let's talk about Children of Men a little bit. Let's talk about the two big set pieces, scenes. So like the first one, there's two scenes in this that are sort of justly celebrated because they last 15 minutes long. And unlike some movies where they've had 15 minute scenes where it's basically a camera mounted and people acting, these are intense, complicated action sequences that were stunning in their execution. And it was only till later I went to the website that made the camera that they filmed the first scene. The first scene is takes place all in this car, and there's these people, they're basically playing around, and then all of a sudden they get attacked by marauders, and this camera never leaves them. It's all in the car, going back and forth, seeing the actors, and there's people driving by motorcycles that they're kicking. I was stunned. I was going, how can they let a person drive
and you're
this car
all in one take.
All in one take. The thing is, what you have is you're seeing everybody in the car. It's not like a certain angle, and you know, okay, now this is the reverse angle, so they've got a stunt driver driving this. You're seeing the guy drive. You're seeing a guy come up beside the car, and you're seeing Clive Owen kick the door and knock this guy and this motorcycle off. I'm going, they take weeks to set up a single stunt like that. And even then they don't put actors around. It's all secure. And here was all done. And one found this website where they showed them the camera rig that they set up to make that. And then you realize just how complex it was and how they did that movie magic where it's this whole, first of all, the car, I don't know why I didn't assume this. I mean, how could I not have assumed this? But the car, of course, the guy's not driving it. It's built slightly up, and there's a little guy hidden out front driving the car and another guy in back driving it when it goes into reverse. So the guy, the dude who's driving the car is not driving the car, which, okay, that makes sense because actors never want to drive and act at the same time. And then there's this entire camera rig there on top of the car. There's like seats with six people sitting around looking down into the car with this camera that's swinging around with them and everything. And you just realize what an incredible setup it was. And then at the end of the movie, they have they basically put a guy with a Steadicam and follows through this whole town with all these explosions going off and all this other stuff and blood splattering on the lens and everything. And as you're watching this movie, you're thinking, wow, this was the right choice to do this. It's not for any other effect. It's not to prove how good a filmmaker they are. It was to show the immediacy of what he was going through and how scary and how creepy it was. And it's a scene that follows him around this corner through this burned out bus up through this building. There's explosions going off regularly. It was stunning. You know, they could not have accomplished this 20 years ago with the old film stock. Because I don't think this was a digital movie. I think it was a film movie. And the only way you can do this is if you have film that can handle regular lighting. But it was stunning. And it definitely wasn't video because if they had gone in with different lighting, it would have thrown the look of the film off. Or I don't know. But anyway, it was stunning. I was struck by how incredible it was and how perfect it was for the scene. It was just awesome. I cannot wait to see that movie again on DVD. Anyway,
Alfonso Cuarón, very, very good director.
And that cinematographer is incredible. Incredible. He's the guy that did, I haven't seen it yet, but supposedly The Incredible, A New World last year. It got okay reviews, but it's the Terrence Malick movie. And apparently, above all else, it looks incredible, and I believe it. This guy is as good as a filmmaker, as a cinematographer can get. So the other movie I saw, you were asking, is Perfume, A Story of a Murderer.
Yeah, I saw the trailer for that a couple weeks ago.
Well, this is directed by one of my absolute favorite directors of all time, a guy named Tom Tykwer, and he's a German dude, and he directed Run Lola Run, which a lot of people saw. He directed an awesome movie called The Princess and the Warrior. He directed a cool movie called Winter Sleeper. So anyway, now this movie here is the biggest European made movie hit in the history of Europe. It's already made $100 million in Europe. I think it's going to make about $2 million in the US. Looking at the movie, I loved it, but it is so freaking weird in certain ways that I could see why and how it had a huge appeal in Europe. And I think the only reason it even got released here is because in wide release to some extent is because Dustin Hoffman's in it and Alan Rickman's in it and other stuff. But it's weird, and it gets even weirder at the end. I mean, it's basically the story of a sociopath who is a killer,
right.
and you don't realize that till halfway through. And I specifically avoided the trailer and everything else because I had heard somebody very early on say, this is a great movie, but don't watch the trailer. It gives everything away. So I specifically, now the problem is originally the movie's called Perfume, and then it became Perfume, Story of a Murderer. So it's not Perfume, Story of a Murderer in Europe.
No, of course.
So
not.
So in America, they are just bound and determined to make sure if you ask any studio executive and ask them, what do people want when they go to movies? They want to know everything about the movie going in. They do not want surprises. That's what they tell you. They say in a trailer, you need to give everything away. You need to give the information out. And I'm freaking tired of that. And this movie here was definitely that. This movie, had they not let those elements out, you know, it would have been a more enjoyable experience. That said, the direction it goes, especially the very end, is so whacked out and bizarre. And completely consistent with the movie. And I liked it. I thought it was a good movie, and I really respected a lot about it. I saw it with Mark. Mark thinks it's one of the, he thinks it's possibly the best movie he's ever seen. And I'm not totally sure where that's coming from.
Okay. That's funny.
But, yeah, anyway, very well filmed, and Tykwer is, he's pretty much a genius with filmmaking, and it's interesting the trajectory his career takes.
Little news blurb that, All of the roadblocks to Indy 4 have fallen.
Yeah.
Everyone has signed off on the script, and they are supposed to start shooting this year.
They've contracted manufacturers of, you know, walkers for Indiana Jones, the special one for. Dude, the guy's like almost 70 now. I mean, and obviously that's going to be the element in the movie. It's probably going to take place at this point, like in the Kennedy era or something, and it'll be some. But I mean, the guy is old.
I totally agree with what you're saying. However, I'm sure it's naive on my part. I don't care. It doesn't matter to me. I think they will make a great film.
It doesn't matter to me.
That's consistent within the canon.
It doesn't matter to me. I agree. I totally agree. I'm just saying that they're going to be most successful if they try not to stretch too much. And if they really go, okay, he is the age he is. Let's, again, have big, fantastic action set pieces, but let's also recognize what it is. Let's not set it in the mid-50s and claim he's in his early 50s. You know, let's not do that.
I see what you're saying. Yeah,
the fact is that, as they pointed out, he's literally 14 years older than Sean Connery was when he played his dad in the last one. You know, I mean, he's definitely moving on in years. But that said, it's ridiculous how long it took, but I will definitely be there opening day.
Oh,
There's no chance I wouldn't.
I saw some trailers in front of Children of Men, some of which I hadn't seen before, which is rare for me now.
Yeah.
One, and this is fascinating to me. It starts out, and the camera's at an angle. It's like basically set on the ground.
Yeah.
And it's this really orange tinged desert area, and I'm like, oh, this is interesting. What's this? And, you know, this foot comes down and starts walking, and they got a chain and they're dragging a body, and it's very Mad Max. I was like, what is this? This looks fascinating. And I start, and then another foot comes down, like wrapped in old wrapper, And then it turns out the camera's attached to the chain this guy's dragging, so the guy's dragging the camera along the ground. And I'm like, this is just interesting. Everything about this trailer is interesting. And then it pulls out, and it's for The Hills Have Eyes 2. And I felt, I was just,
Well, I saw the first remake of the first one, dude. And they got this French director dude to direct it. And guys, for his genre, was pretty talented and pretty clever. And if they got the same guy to direct it, for what it's worth, he can't tell a complete story, but he can do effective, compelling imagery. And there's nothing wrong with that.
I would have been very interested in that trailer. I have no interest in The Hills Have Eyes 2.
I know. I actually bought The Hills Have Eyes 1.
I will not be borrowing
that. Well, it was directed by the guy who directed that French thriller High Tension, which was crap in a lot of levels, but had a lot of really interesting visuals. I mean, in every genre, in comedy, romantic comedy, horror, gore, there's people that are legitimately good at certain aspects and people are legitimately bad, and he's good at that. So it doesn't surprise me if he was the one that he could develop a 2-minute segment that would be compelling. As for a whole movie, it ends up being getting really old really quickly.
Saw a trailer for The Kingdom,
which one was that?
That's Samuel L. Jackson.
Oh yeah, I saw that too.
Basically, a bomb goes off in Saudi Arabia.
That was a well done trailer. It struck me as like, wow, that looked kind
of
good. A
lot of good people.
Jamie Foxx and who else?
Oh,
was
not
it?
Samuel Jackson.
Jamie Foxx and Jennifer Garner and a lot
Chris
of
Chris Cooper, who's like. He's definitely the character actor for
Did you notice that that I don't know if it was that way when you saw it, but they showed that one and then the next trailer.
That's next on my list.
Okay, because it was like, wait, didn't we just see him playing the exact same character 30 seconds ago in the previous trailer?
But this, you're right, and also Jason Bateman. It's funny how he's got all this work after Arrested Development.
Wasn't it cool to go Jason Bateman? Cool, he's like becoming a big time guy because it was so cool in Arrested Development. It was like, I hope he doesn't screw this up because it's like, wow, it's not a comedy. It's kind of an action thing, and he didn't strike me as playing comedy relief in the movie. So it's like cool.
But yeah, no, it looks like a good, interesting movie. You know, lots of well done action and addressing some of the tensions between, you know, what it's like to try and conduct an investigation in Saudi Arabia. Yep. And it looked really
well,
good.
Well, I liked it. The movie might totally suck, but I liked it from just the standpoint of, wow, great. It's for once not a movie that's taking place in the mythical country of Kadam or whatever. It's, you know, it's at, what was the one in West Wing before they decided to use real names?
That was, Kumar.
Yeah. Kumar. And you know, I totally understood, but I rail against that. I'd rather them just pick a real thing. But, anyway,
so the next trailer was Breach, which is essentially Aldrich Ames.
Absolutely.
The and they never really said, they didn't say it was based on a true story.
I think that if I remember, they said something about inspired by things, or maybe they didn't. I don't know.
Chris Cooper plays Aldrich Ames, an FBI agent who was selling basically a double agent working actually for the Soviets or the Russians, depending on
everything they were doing in that trailer was exactly Aldrich Ames' story. It was him. They sent somebody else to track him down. It was him, you know, having an affair. They thought he was a deviant. They were looking into him. He actually didn't come across that way. I mean, but who knows, you know? I think the Aldrich Ames story, the challenge with that was it was more mundane than it should have been, so maybe they've beefed it up.
Although, looking at the credits, I never heard of the director before, whose name I can't remember. Hmm. I'll have to look it up online, but it was, who's that?
Yeah.
So we'll see. So that's sort of it for my...
You know what, in terms of trailers that occurred to me watching Perfume... I told you the thing that will identify trailers like 10 years from now from this time is that whole stupid moving a camera really quickly and then slowing down, you know, that kind of camera zooms in and then slow motion kind of thing, which is so overdone these days. Well, it occurred to me there's another thing which is driving me nuts. And then I realized, God, I used it in my little video for my auction for my nonprofit I work for, is this show a quick scene, show like literally 30 seconds, then quick fade to black, then fade up to the next scene and fade to black. And I was sitting there watching the trailers and I noticed immediately it was happening. So there was 6 trailers at Perfume. 5 of them used that technique and every one of them did it at least 10 times in the trailer. And there's nothing more. It's like your eyes are barely adjusting. It's dark anyway. And then it's bright and then it's dark and it's bright. I hate that. I hate it. Just stop doing that. It's killing me. And those two trailers you mentioned both used that, especially that first one. And it was like, oh, don't just show us more scenes. Don't be overdoing this. It was killing me. Anyway, okay. I digress.
excuse me. So one thing we really haven't talked about, or if we have, I've forgotten about it. And we're going to rehash it. NFL Network. Yeah. Well, it's not brand new, but they really put some effort into trying to sell the NFL Network this year.
Yep.
And this is a network owned by the NFL.
Yep.
And the big controversy this year has been how few cable operators are willing to put it on, because the NFL wants to charge like $8 a head per house, or $8 per household. And essentially the only cable channel that gets away with like more than a dollar is ESPN.
So, but they're not selling it as a premium?
No.
So why aren't they just doing that? Why aren't they just,
because you get more eyes, you get into more households if you're basic.
Well, I agree, but who's going to spend $8?
Well, that's why Comcast and I think Time. Well, I don't know. I don't actually know who else aside from Comcast.
I mean, that's insanity. That's absolute insanity.
Well, and even then it might be regional, because I know John has NFL. Anyway, I'm not actually sure which cable channels are balking, but they are balking. And so the NFL's hopeful hook this year was to get actual games as opposed to just replaying games. And so second half of the season, they had Thursday night games, and they had some on Christmas. I think it was – they had the Thanksgiving games, at least one of them, and I think they had some over Christmas too. But it turns out that – most of the games were complete yawners. They weren't competitive games. You know, it would be like Oakland, Cincinnati, who cares?
Yeah.
Because both those teams stink out loud this year. And so their hope was that people would be screaming to see these games and see, I need NFL Network. But nobody cared, so nobody did it. So that didn't happen.
Yeah.
And it's just interesting to, you know, to see what they're trying to do. They're trying to be completely vertically integrated in terms of the NFL, of not having to rely on NBC or CBS.
See, here's my reason why the whole concept is flawed from the beginning. It's the same reason why, to some extent, the NFL on Sirius Radio and others is, or MLB on XM is not the greatest thing. It's that, yes, that, okay, you're talking about they want the most eyes and there's a broad support for football, but like let's say the typical Seattle, let's say 100 Seattle households that enjoy football, 98% of them are going to say, yeah, 99% of my enjoyment is the Seahawks. Yeah, I want to see other ones, but it's the Seahawks. Well, we definitely get that as it is. So you're talking about access to other games.
If you're a Seahawks fan and the only place you can see the game is on NFL Network.
Well, that's true. But you're talking about outside of Seattle. Okay. But 98% of the people who want to see Seahawks games are in the Seattle market. To create a network for the odd person who lives in Kentucky who wants to see the Seahawks every week.
But that's not it. That's not what they're doing. Okay. Because that's not what NBC does. They still have, now, granted, maybe there's
some aspect. If I live in Seattle, can I not, do I have to subscribe to the NFL Network to see every Seahawks game?
I believe so, although this year.
Because I've seen them every game this year.
Well, this year, the Thursday night game, which was the big storm night when I was in the hospital, was San Francisco-Seattle. They were simulcasting on Fox.
Yeah.
I don't know how that happened.
Because that's the local. Because they've secured local rights to it, and Fox has rights.
I don't know. You don't know that for a fact.
That's the way it's always been, unless they've changed this.
But I think they're trying to change it, so that's why in my mind it's plausible.
Okay, so if they're trying to change it, that's a different thing. But as it currently stands, it's my understanding that every game is broadcast locally.
Well, I think their goal is to end if it works. They want to replace the net. They want to replace broadcasting on the networks. And from a consumer standpoint, it's just like, oh, well, instead of NBC, I go to NFL. I don't care. I'm still getting the game.
Oh, I agree.
I think that's their end goal, because that way they keep all the advertising money themselves.
If they were to accomplish that, I would agree.
Now, I think that's their end goal. It didn't work this season. And if you watched any of the games on NFL Network, like I have, I have Dish Network, and it's part of my package, as well as NFL HD, which is nice.
Are they all in HD? That's the other critical component.
Depends on your package.
And then if it is NFL Network, is the production value as good
The production value is, the commentators aren't. You get a lot, like Bryant Gumbel is one of them, and he's not good.
Wow, they hired Bryant Gumbel? Wow.
Well,
he's not a commentator. I like Bryant Gumbel.
Most of my friends will, after a game where he's been forced to call, they all bitch to me. My dad sends me email talking about how bad he is. And me, I really generally don't notice how bad football announcers are, because I'm usually doing something else while I'm watching the game and not paying attention to the announcers.
I watched the CIA game yesterday. I just turned the sound off. And I like Al Michaels, and I like, what's his name, Madden. But I generally don't really listen to him at all. Because it's not my cup of tea. I just turn it off. To me, I want to make sure they have all of the cool camera angles. I want to make sure they have the yellow goddamn line. And I want to make sure they have that damn camera that swings overhead. I love that thing, you know?
Well, the other thing about the NFL Network is, if you watch a game on there, 50% of, I haven't actually tracked it, but it seems like 50% of the ads are house ads, which means ads for the NFL Network.
Yeah.
And anytime you do that, it gets really old. I mean, it was bad watching the Seahawks game yesterday, and oh my God, was that a coronary-inducing game, because we won by 1 point in the last seconds of the game. We should have lost the game.
Absolutely.
And then Cowboys muff a field goal, and I'm hopping up and down. I've gone through this emotional roller coaster, swearing, giving up. Oh my God, we're back in it. Oh, the game is over. We're done. Oh, we're back. Oh, the game's over. My poor wife's over on the couch, just like scared to go near me.
You know what I was doing is I was watching Kill Bill at that point, because I had decided, the Seahawks screwed up, because friggin' Dallas was down at the 1-yard line and had just gotten a first down or whatever. And I'm going, well, this game is over. I am not going to put myself through watching the end of this game. What an idiot. So I'm there turning to Kill Bill a half hour later going, I read this email. I'm having a heart attack at the end of this game. I go, what? And you didn't imply they won. You just sort of implied that maybe it had happened. And then it took me like 10 minutes to get my computer up and running to find out that they had won. And I was like, oh, you idiot, Richard. Idiot.
And it's
good, because I convinced I would have jinxed the game and they would have lost had I not turned off.
Ironically, that was a man law from earlier in the day.
What's
of
that?
Not leaving the game early.
I know, but but the flip side of that is I jinx games, so I clearly would have caused them to lose the game had I not turned it off.
No,
so.
But what I was going to say was, even just watching a game on NBC or CBS or whatever, oh my God, does their advertising... It's on like it's like top 40 advertising. You're on such a short cycle.
Yep.
You see the same spots over and over and over.
Yep.
And if I have to see another one of those gosh darn GM ads with that John Mellencamp, "Aren't We an Amazing Country" song, I'm going to see the playoffs. So I'm going to hear it again, but it's driving me nuts. Not like I'm going to buy it.
That's their core ad for those things.
Those Chevy trucks. And even if the people they're aiming at in the heartland, quote unquote, even if I was, living there, I would feel beat over the head with this Americana message, which is so contrived and so forced.
If I see another one of those,
every break, it's on.
I think it's Toyota. I can't remember what the one that's got the truck, and they're using. And it's like in this industrial thing, and it's dark, super slow motion of the truck, like front end, so you can see like the grill shaking or whatever. And they've got Iron Man in the background by Black Sabbath. Oh, no, that's
a Nissan Titan.
Nissan, okay.
And the other conceit of that ad is that the guys are, is that what you're going to say?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, go ahead.
So it drives me nuts. So I'm watching this ad, and the first time I said it, I go, I guess I'm really old, because a favorite song of my youth is now for this ad. It's like slow motion Iron Man or whatever. And then, so they played two versions of that, like around Christmas. And then the next one is... you're seeing a football game, and then all of a sudden you're seeing the little TiVo or PVR line go forward as somebody's fast forwarding through the football game. And then you hear this voiceover. Oh, here it is. Here it is. Here it is. And then they play the beginning of the ad as it goes. And then you see them backtrack to reverse to, well, let's watch it again. And in that split second, I thought, well, whatever I liked about that ad, which I didn't like much, ruined it. I hated that so much. This whole thing. I
completely agree. Oh, it is so false.
Oh, it's like, this is a cool ad, and we're meta reminding you how cool it is, so you can be with us. And it's like, screw you. Whatever I thought about your stupid product, I hate because of this horribly smug ad that you put out.
Oh, completely agree. Completely agree. Oh. There's that, and then just the NBC house ads for whatever they're promoting, and oh, look, hey, we get it. Friday Night Lights, new night. And it's, again, every break or this or that. And it's just so heavy. And you're like, you can shake it up a little bit.
You know what I thought was weird was the lead announcement when they were starting it on. They have NBC, they only have playoffs, right? They haven't had regular coverage this year.
No, they've had regular coverage.
Okay, so maybe they do it on their regular games, whatever. But they hired Pink to do the
she did the Sunday Night Football intro.
Okay,
so every week that's been on.
Okay, so this I think was a new one because she was singing about the playoffs.
I was outside of the
okay
room.
Well, needless to say, she looks horrible because they gave her the same haircut they gave Natalie Maines for the Dixie Chicks a couple of years ago on tour, where she pulls her hair up really tight on the side and or the top, and it makes her look like a pinhead. And then she wears this dress that Pink is generally in good shape, but it makes her look like she's trying to hide that she's fat. And then she sort of half sings through this song about football, and it looks terrible, and she looks terrible, and she's somebody who can look attractive. And I'm like watching this going, man, bring back Hank Williams Jr.
No. Well, no, he's still doing Monday night.
Yeah, I know. ESPN.
I hate. Why do we need Pink? Why do we need Hank Williams Jr. singing in front of a football game?
I
hate it. I hate it. I hate it. It is so awkward. It is so bombastic. It is so unnecessary.
I agree. But that said, if they did something semi-cool, I could tolerate it. If they brought Jack White of the White Stripes to do something funky, I would tolerate it. But these are so contrived, and they make them bad when they could have made them at least a semblance of good. You could have left that going, God, I hate that. But, good for Pink because she came across kind of well, even though it's a stupid thing. But no, this was like bad, and Pink came across horribly. But anyway.
So I was reading on Engadget this morning, the first dual Blu-ray HD DVD player is set to go on sale soon. Looks like it'll be revealed. I don't know if it's revealed at CES, but it's from LG, and it's about $1,100 or
$1,200. Cool.
So that's, if this now takes off, in essence, that doesn't end the format war, but it's like 80%, 90% there.
Yeah.
But we'll see. Will the price come down fast enough to let these discs gain traction over downloads?
Yep.
So I just thought I'd mention that.
Yeah, I mean,
because there have been rumors for like a year and a half of not dual player. Well, does the Sony right system allow for a dual player?
Yeah.
Or are they like, no, Blu-ray, no HDVD? And
They need to get about $100. That's where everything will happen. Did you hear that Xbox officially passed like 10.4 million, ten million mark?
I saw that.
Which is really cool. It's so funny how Xbox just quietly plugged away, and they had all those stories about PS3 and Wii, and like Xbox was as good as those systems. That's the irony is they, and Microsoft, to their credit, decided we're just going to keep selling consoles. We're not going to get in the whole we're better war, but
they're smarter than that.
Yeah, they were, it was smart. They had an extremely good Christmas, and they sold more than those guys, like four times more than them combined.
And somebody brought up, it's not fair to do a comparison of Gears of War versus, which is an Xbox 360 game, versus Resistance Fall of Man, which is a launch PS3 title, because the Gears of War is a generation ahead. Yeah. And I would have been like, well, yeah, eventually PS3 catches up. Well, of course, the corollary to that is the next generation 360 game will be out by the time, so the 360 is always a generation ahead in terms of what the developers can get out in terms of performance, which for some reason escaped me.
Well, I was struck by, even though I was thinking Microsoft's going to run me in the ground, but at Christmas, my brother wanted to get his daughter a PS3. And I go, well, You can get it, but you know, honestly, you should consider an Xbox. And he was going, so he was saying, well, no, I just really kind of want to get this. I go, well, let me just send you a couple reviews, just because I'm telling you the Xbox is good or better than the PS3. Well, but we got all those other games. And I go, let me send you the articles that are pointing out how incompatible all the old games are. But you're not going to throw away your old PlayStation, are you? Well, no. Well, then you can still play them. You're not you. It's not like you're doing a commitment. But I'm going to tell you, the minute you get this new console, you're not going to play the old games anyway. So it's just not going to happen. You know, it's rare the ones that do it, but nope. So what does he do? He buys her a PS3 game with the anticipation of when he can get a PS3 halfway through the year. And I'm thinking, wow, why did you not just buy her an Xbox? You get to borrow my games if the game was the issue. But I'm sure there's a lot of people like that. For whatever reason, they are, you know, they're committed to that brand. And so that, for no other reason, shows why I believe that the PS3 will at least be the equal of Xbox in terms of price sales at some point, just because of inertia, I think.
Yeah, I mean, we'll just have to see. No one's counting Sony out, but they certainly bungled their launch.
Yeah, tell me about it.
So now there's pictures circulating that look pretty valid of the next version of the 360 that has an HDMI port.
Yep.
Which, that's good, but as an owner of a 360 that doesn't have an HDMI port, they had better release a cable with an out.
Yeah.
Because if otherwise, I mean, you piss off the 10.4 million people.
Yeah.
Well, the 10. I don't know how many of those percentage would care, but I care. And that would really, really piss me off if they introduce some function, no matter what it is, console that they can't be somehow grafted onto the existing one.
Yeah.
That's unacceptable. That is unacceptable.
Yep.
I'm sorry.
So how far have you gotten on TDU?
Well, it's
still broken. That's right.
You know, it took, because it broke on a Saturday, so I didn't get the box until Thursday.
Yeah.
The UPS repair box. Of course, you know, I stayed up late that night to get it in the box, took it to a UPS hub on Friday.
Yep.
And I checked the tracking number. Yesterday it was in Portland on its way to Texas. So God knows when I'm going to get this thing back.
Oh, that's wonderful. They always, to save money, they do it ground
shipping. No, it's 3-day select.
Oh, okay.
And I will give them credit. That's a good, you know, you can't expect them to do next day air. That costs a friggin' fortune.
Yeah.
Second day air, also very expensive. 3-day select is a good, I give them credit for that. Yeah. But it's still, you know, it takes 3 days to get to your house. Then by the time when you got to package it, get it into the hub, 3 days to get to the repair center. God knows how long it lives there.
So what?
Then
what,
it's got to come back, and then they need a signature for delivery. And then you're like, well, I don't want an Xbox sitting on my porch.
Yeah.
So then you got to wait for them to make an attempt. Then you got to call them up and say, can you please hold it at your hub so I can come get it after work? I mean, it's this whole song and dance.
So what are they saying went wrong? Is this a common thing that's happening with others?
They don't know. It's you get the ring of light flashes different error codes.
Yeah, yeah.
And the one I got, which is the 3 red lights, is a general hardware failure. So I don't know.
It's like overheated or something. But yours, you got yours pretty well.
I have a low slung rack, basically wooden thing that my TV sits on.
And you keep it on its side, because supposedly the way I keep it is like less efficient than on its side.
I stored it horizontally. Yeah. There was like 2 inches of ventilation on either side, an inch above it, and it had there was no back to the unit, so it was free flowing.
Yeah.
You know, it's possible it could have overheated. I have heard different things. I had one guy, 6 months ago, was searching through the forums and said that he had read the best way to orient it is horizontally. All the failures are when people are storing it vertically.
Yeah.
My friend who works at Microsoft, who, you know, did the same thing, went through forums, and I guess he's on some internal email lists or whatever, had the exact opposite. He says people are now saying you should store it vertically and not horizontally. And I don't know who to believe. I will say that if you're standing it up vertically, you're not storing it in a rack. You're probably by default getting more airflow around it if you're storing it vertically.
Yeah, because
except
it's like,
for you.
Well, with mine, I can't do it horizontally because I have the receiver on top, and that thing heats up like an oven. And if I put it on top of that thing and stored it horizontally, I would be creating like a fissure in the earth that would get so hot.
Well,
so,
it's,
But yeah. I don't know. I mean, I haven't had any problem. Yeah, that thing gets loud when you start playing a game. But other than that, I haven't had any problems with
it. I will say, you know, things break, and that's fine. And if this is part of the regular error rate, that's fine. On the other hand, you know, you shouldn't have released the thing if it has an overheating problem. That's ridiculous.
But I haven't heard consistently that's a problem. I mean, the fact that we haven't, you haven't heard these may, I mean, we hear a lot, but 10.4 million units, you could look at a forum and see a zillion people on there and it seems like it's a bigger deal, but I haven't heard a major problem.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it pisses you off because you paid for the thing and I've been without it for a week and it sucks.
Yeah.
Okay, so the last thing to discuss on my list, Macworld is this Tuesday.
Yep. Tuesday morning, 9 a.m. I think it's the keynote. And can we watch the keynote? Or is one of those things where...
I think they used to stream it live, but I don't think they do anymore.
Well, there's a website that's going to be like live typing what he's saying.
Well, there's like 4 or 5 websites that live blog it, including... I've settled on Engadget recently.
Yeah.
Or the past 2, and mainly because...
Maybe that was one I was looking at.
Like MacNN used to do it, or I think they still do, and I think... Well, whatever. Engadget servers usually allow for you to keep it pretty up to date, whereas the other smaller sites, they just get hammered with everybody hitting, you know, F5 every 30 seconds.
Well, you should say, so tell about what Amazon did that was so funny.
Oh, so I guess Amazon had the new versions of iLife and iWork available for pre-order. And that was up for a day, and then it was taken down and replaced by, you know, Macworld announcement number 3, Macworld announcement number 4.
And I thought, when I saw that, I thought, that's funny. Because clearly somebody yelled at him, and then they go, oh, God. And they put this up. But I started to think later, if somebody, and what I'm assuming happened, if somebody at Apple screwed up and said, oh, yeah, put them up, and then later said, no, take them down. They're going, dang it, you said we could put them up. And so that's why they did that. But if Amazon screwed up and just put them up early and was just being snarky, I thought that's kind of a jerk move. Funny, but jerky. You know, but I suspect Apple kind of script, because I can't imagine Amazon doing what they did afterwards with the Macworld announcement number whatever. I can't imagine them doing that if they hadn't have had permission and then that permission was taken away.
We'll see. I mean, it's interesting because...
Those are probably the minor announcements.
I mean, nobody really gives a crap about...
Well, the big one everybody's expecting that I'm hearing is actually 2 or 3 weeks late is the ITV.
Well, it may not be... The availability might not be... able to buy one on Tuesday, but like within it, they'll announce it.
No, that's what I'm saying. It was so rare when he announced it early, but invariably it's, and you can buy this now at the Apple store. And this will be yet another rare thing where, and you can buy this in 2 weeks at the Apple store, whatever.
A lot of times when they do their new hardware, the new PowerBooks, say, you know, and this will be available in a month, or, you know, the pre-orders are so quick that you can't get one for a month and a half anyway.
You know, you're right. I forgot about that. That's true.
You know, it's disappointing when you can't get it instantly, but I don't want a first generation product.
Yeah.
I'll wait for the assembly lines to have been cranking for a while, or ideally, you know, usually second revision or the first revision, I guess, is when to dive in. But, what was I going to say? Something else about keynote. I don't know. Usually pretty consistently, somebody is screwed up the day before. Like, you know, the cover of Time is released and you know what the new iMac is going to look like. Or Newsweek messes up their website embargo system and somebody finds it.
Sorry, it's my dryer.
Somebody finds it early. And so usually at least one thing is prominently leaked accidentally a day or two before.
Yeah.
And, you know, we still have tomorrow, Monday, to see if that happens. But so far, I mean, everyone has a pretty good idea of what's going to happen, but there hasn't been an official... Whoops, there's the cover for Time with the new iPhone
That's the iPhone. And then what else do we think is coming down? I mean, the iPhone's the big one everybody's talking about. The ITV.
ITV, which won't be called ITV. iPhone, which won't be called iPhone.
And the ITV is, there's nothing really new. They've already said what they're going to do with that. I mean,
been some rumors that there's some capabilities in that that haven't been revealed
yet. The big thing that I saw yesterday was the whole pure commitment to the widescreen format, as opposed to what they do now. If something's in widescreen, they send it in 4:3 and letterbox it. Here it's, we're going to send things in a pure high def, pure, you know, this kind of thing. And to me, it's like, well, that's not really much of an announcement. It's not going to change people's perception of anything, but that seemed kind of cool.
A lot of people are talking about new displays, which doesn't affect me at all. Cause I'm pretty much, I'm locked into laptops now. I don't have my, basically in order for me to have a desktop, I need to have the desktop where I can see my TV. Otherwise I will never be on the desktop. Cause that's just the way my life is, which is sad and pathetic.
Yeah. I'm locked in my regular home computer is totally a media server kind of thing for me right now. I don't even go on it at all ever.
So
I just sit around a laptop on my lap like it is right now.
So yeah, I mean, a lot of people are expecting eventually the Apple displays to get up to the point where they're essentially as big as TVs.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got a 30-incher now, which that's good for a smallish TV. Yep. I wouldn't want that to be my main living room TV, but when you start getting up into 42,
yeah,
you know, that's certainly 42 inches is.
Did you see that Sony has completely gotten out of the monitor game, including LCD monitors now?
Nope.
And Sony, for the longest time, from the mid-80s all the way through the late 90s, was the absolute gold standard with their Trinitron monitors. They're famous. They were the reference monitor. They had deeper blacks. This is the old CRT monitors, but they were the best. Everybody said they're made differently and they're the best. And then CRT monitors, you know, went by the wayside, and they pretty much held out with LCD, but they really somewhat couldn't differentiate themselves. And now they've just gotten out of the game altogether. It's amazing because they were the standard for 15 years, the absolute standard. People go in and go, and it's so funny. I remember at the time, because you'd buy a 13-inch monitor. That was like what you bought. And you could say, well, I'm going to spend $450 on this monitor, but I really want a Sony, so I'll spend the $700. And people would spend $700 for a 13-inch Sony monitor. Unbelievable, but no longer out of that business.
So what else are we expecting? The EyeSight probably integrated into all displays now.
Yeah.
Because apparently EyeSights have been taken off the Apple Store.
Yeah.
I heard that on MacBreak Weekly. I'm looking forward to the next computer I having an EyeSight, because my mom actually has a webcam, and that'll be kind of interesting to play around with that. I've never had a webcam.
I have one, and I could never, ever get it to... It's supposedly using one of these instant messenger things, you could get it to integrate with the Apple stuff, but I could never do it. So they were beyond me, the capability of getting to work. I don't understand why it's so difficult, but invariably on the PC side, it's like going in and changing some router setting. And it's like, what the hell is this? Get something that just works. It makes no sense. So if my next computer is a Mac, which it probably will be, which I'll mostly use for a PC, the fact that it has integrated EyeSight, or is that what it's called?
Yeah, yeah.
Is probably a good thing, because everybody else in my family, my mom who's in Arizona, my brother in Marysville, my dad, everybody has that. So that'll probably be good.
I can just see you eye chatting with your dad who lives
I could actually see it if my dad, because my dad, here's the reason. My dad regularly shows up at my house. And I go, why are you showing up at my house? Because he's basically lost my phone number again, and he doesn't remember it. So he stops by. He stops by work. I work 40 miles away, and he'll stop by work to drop something off because he needs to get a hold of me. If on the computer, especially if he screwed something up, sorry about that. If he screwed something up and he needs to get a hold of me, and there's literally a button that says Richard, it will be much more convenient, and I'll probably be online. So it'll be much more convenient. So I could actually highly imagine my dad doing it, because I've made it easier for him. Actually taken my business card and put it on his fridge and other stuff. And he'll lose that, which has my phone number on it. He'll lose that, and then he'll just stop by and show up.
Okay.
Which is kind of cool, because it's like, oh, good, I get to see my dad, because I wouldn't see him otherwise. You're right, he only lives a couple miles away, but... So anyway, I argue against what you're saying.
There might be some revisions to the notebooks. And apparently the big desktop right now is a quad processor.
Yep.
I guess there's now an 8 processor. You know, it's 4 four dual processors in there, which gives you 8. I guess that's about ready to go.
Sweet.
Which is great, but doesn't affect me because I'm not getting a desktop or a tower. And I think that's about... And maybe just a generically new iPod, which has the touchless or the full integrated screen, or that's... You know what I mean?
Oh, so generic... That's a huge announcement.
But, well, maybe. I mean, I haven't actually
seen... They've been talking about that for a year and a half.
A lot of people think it's overdue, but I haven't seen as much chatter about that as I have about the iPhone. So it's ideally...
Well, it's huge overdue because that was the assumption literally for over a year, and they just assumed they just couldn't get it right.
So it's, you know, unless the iPhone is that new iPod, and essentially now you can't... You know, if you buy an iPod now, are you getting the phone capabilities? Yeah. Are they just saying, you know what, this is it? And I doubt it. Well, no, they can't do that because the capacities, everyone has sort of settled on the fact that the capacities are 4 gigabyte and 8 gigabyte.
Yeah.
And so you can't. And since what's the biggest iPod right now? 60 gigabyte.
Yeah, 60.
So yeah, so they have to, for at least for now, segregate an iPod and an iPhone.
Well, yeah, because flash memory versus others, but there's no reason why the drives and Hitachi or somebody's made an even smaller drive, which I'm sure Apple is going to buy out their entire supply of. But the drive, I mean, you can make an iPhone with a hard drive in there and have 60 gigs. There's no reason they don't. They just choose to use flash memory, make them even smaller.
I am. Oh, and the other thing, I'm on. Leo Laporte thinks that Leopard, the next OS, will be ready to go and release.
Wow.
He thinks that, they're saying, you know what? It looks pretty mature. And I think that because the other things might be delayed, Steve likes to say, here's something you can buy right now.
He
thinks that'll be it.
Wow.
And granted, that's another reason I've kind of been pushing back not buying a laptop yet, was it'd be kind of nice if it was integrated with the new OS without having to do a reinstall or anything. And
I agree. I noticed that you're talking about, well, it might be this iPod, where I'm thinking, it's so funny because had Microsoft not kind of flubbed the Zune, I think that's all we'd have been talking about is what iPod are they putting out here to compete with the Zune. But Microsoft has clearly been their own worst enemy with that thing, and Apple doesn't feel any, it seems, pressure to respond at all.
It's really interesting to hear the various takes on the Zune. Like Penny Arcade, Tycho got one, and he kind of likes it.
I'm not saying it's not good or bad. I'm just saying that the overall result in terms of sales, in terms of a meta perception, is that Microsoft screwed it up. Even though on an individual basis, some people say, "Oh, I kind of like it," or "I like this and that," or whatever.
I think by and large, the public just doesn't know. Even after this gigantic big launch, how much money they spent on launching it, they're like, "Oh, okay."
Yep. I'm driving from one small town of Woodinville to another small town of Monroe, Washington, and looking over at a billboard that shows some ad that's clearly designed for hipsters in downtown Seattle about something about Welcome to Social. I'm going, wow, they just have a huge ad budget and they're throwing them everywhere because their target audience is not the cow farmers of Monroe, Washington.
So that's really funny.
That said, actually, there's probably a lot of Microsoft people that are moving out there with like expensive homes or something.
I don't know about Monroe.
Yeah, I don't know.
If I worked at Microsoft and I made a ton of money, I would not live in Monroe.
Yeah.
There was, what was I going to say about Zune? Oh, and then a lot of talk about DRM and whether Apple will go to a subscription format. Alex Lindsay, who is the main guy of MacBreak Weekly, says that, he kind of likes the $15 a month and you get everything.
That would change everything for me. That's exactly what I would want because it's way too expensive right now for me. And if you gave me access to everything, the problem is I'm not sure the content providers want to do it. You're talking about music. Or you're talking about TV
music.
Music. I could care less. TV. That's what I would want. I would want you give me a bunch of
content.
But they're not going to do that because somebody new coming on, you're just further subdividing the pie.
Yeah. Anyway, he says that's one thing he really likes about the Zune is that the that subscription model, regardless of the whole regardless of the fact that if you own an MP3, the Zune slaps its own DRM on it, that's which is completely retarded.
Yeah.
He likes that versus necessarily the Apple version where it's expensive. Anyway.
Go ahead.
I'm tired of talking about Zune and DRM. Well,
I was going to say that I don't know if you noticed some of the latest RIAA lawsuits are somewhat successfully arguing that this is ridiculous, that RIAA is claiming $750 in damages per song. They're saying that has no fundamental basis in reality because they sell those songs for an average of about 70 cents. And they're and apparently a judge is basically supporting this notion. And RA is freaking out because what they're basically saying is that they're saying you either need to tell us how much you're paying or give us an assessment. And it's probably going to come down to like a buck a song, which means how much you would have paid for them in the first place. So what they're doing, it's crippling the RIAA and their lawsuits. To some extent, RIAA has basically won because they've so cowed it and people have so moved on to this other way of getting music. But I just thought that was really interesting because RIAA has scared and so many people with these lawsuits, and there's and rare person that fights back, and there's this one dude fighting back and maybe winning, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, and I completely agree with another thing they say on MacBreak Weekly, which is that, and also This Week in Media, which is that, you know, sooner or later, it's not going to matter. That unless the labels fundamentally change the way they do business, the artists will realize they don't need labels.
Yep.
And you can essentially do it now. It's just going to take a while for it to percolate through. But if you're a band, between MySpace, Pro Tools. I don't know why I couldn't get that out.
Adobe Audition.
Between Pro Tools and
GarageBand.
To really professionally produce something on equipment that's affordable in a home studio, in your garage, quote unquote, in your office at home, has come to the point where you don't need, you can go in.
But that's not necessarily the thing. It's the distribution.
Well, yeah, but it's that.
And distribution is disappearing. There's like very.
I was getting to that.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I was just saying you don't need the studio to front you the money or the label to front you the money to rent a studio for a month to go in and record and tootle around like Spinal Tap or like, oh my God, he's been doing this all day. Could you get him to play the song? or you've got that, you know, you're paying for sound engineers to use incredibly expensive mixing boards. You don't need to do that anymore. And you're right. What the labels do is get your name out to the masses. You really don't even need that anymore.
Well, it's they get your name out to the masses. So that's a and huge function with marketing. But then in addition to that, they control distribution. They get them out so they can sell them. And as we're pointing out, it's increasingly online or digital versions the way they're sold. So at that point, literally it makes no difference. Just like you and I can have our podcast on iTunes and some professional person can do it. There's no difference.
Exactly, right.
And you're exactly right. The labels are effectively, they better figure out what's going on because they're effectively dead in that sense.
You're exactly right. And to some degree, it's already happening. Like Peter Gabriel, you know, I guess self-published his own last disc, which I didn't realize. I knew he had his own studio, Real World. I didn't realize that he was, I think it was Arista was his old label.
Yeah.
I didn't realize he was off that label. But as they continually point out on This Week in Media, you may not sell as many copies.
Yeah.
Does that over?
It's going to be over in like maybe one or two.
I mean, does it over? Can you rip it out when it's over talking or not? Should we stop talking?
No, not really. It'll be the humor of the show. I'm sorry. Well, if we stop, I might be able to
start talking about professional audio recording.
As the buzzer goes off.
Well, you sell less copies potentially, but you're making more per copy.
Way more. In fact, the guys in Collective Soul, I heard them on Howard Stern like last year, and they were pointing out that, you know, Collective Soul had a huge initial career and then they kind of didn't sell as many records and they were really frustrated with their label and everything because they were not making any money or whatever, and then they got dropped and then they decided, well, let's kind of p- put it out ourselves and do it in this weird distribution model. And as they pointed out, they said that, okay, we sold 1 million records of this one record. Now, this new record we did, we sold, you know, it's our fans, and we sold 180,000 copies of records. We literally made 5 times as much money as we made on our million selling record. And they said, now, yep, we didn't sell as many records, but the people wanted it, got it, and we got pretty much everything out of that. And I thought, wow, good for them. And they're way happier, because it's not just that. Artistically, they just feel like they're doing exactly what they want. And it would have been even cooler if I actually liked Collective Soul.
But no, that's definitely the wave of the future. Yeah. Quite on. Anyway, it's the wave of the present, but it'll take a while.
Yeah.
And the other aspect to signing with the label, there was a local band called, originally they were called Willis.
Yep.
Local to Seattle. And then they changed their name to the Actual Tigers.
Yep.
And they were signed. They got signed to a label, and it was a great band. They played them on the radio station I work at occasionally. Really a good band, but they got signed. And then, so they recorded a new disc, and then it sat there. The label wouldn't release it. And then I think the label got bought. And so,
And then you get totally forgotten because it's a new regime. That's somebody else.
They don't know what
artist.
To do with you, and they don't release the record. And you're this band, and you've recorded this record, and you're like, gosh darn it.
And you don't have rights to it. You know?
No, and it's locked up.
Yep.
And, you know, it's got to be incredibly frustrating as an artist.
Yeah.
And eventually the band broke up, and I think that was part of it, was the frustration of we're a band, but nobody knows we're a band because our CD's locked up with the label that, you know, they get bought. And this happens a lot. Labels get bought out a lot. They shuffle, they drop artists all the time. So a relationship you have with one person is eliminated, and suddenly you have to develop a new relationship. Do they even want you? Do they care? You know, and doing that whole process, you know, your work, your life is in their hands.
Yeah.
And so that frustration, I think, really pushes the artist to looking and saying, how can we do this without the label?
Yeah.
So it's all leading towards this elimination of the label, at least the business as we know it, and into the artist doing their own thing.
Speaking of labels, I don't know if they're going to announce this at Mackerel, but I thought it was kind of cool that, you know, for the longest time, there was always this kind of ad hoc service that you could, with whatever music player you had, it would use CDDB lookup.
CD database.
And it would pull up specifically like the lyrics of your songs. And everybody would go, oh, what a great service. And then labels and others would balk. And you don't blame them because these are copyright material. This is like, it may be a short thing, but Bob Dylan actually wrote this damn song. And, but anyway, that CDDB actually grew up, became an actual company, and they've worked out finally licensing arrangements with every one of the major music publishers and all these littler ones or whatever. And now, and they're assuming Apple and others will just work with them and go, okay, if you want this as an add-on, you can automatically download all these lyrics if you like. And I'm one of those kinds of people that love having lyrics with my songs. I love to be able to just have the access to them.
Yeah, but to me, I can go onto the internet and find lyrics in about a half a second. I don't need Apple to pay money to give me an easier solution to that.
I don't. The way they're describing it, it's not going to be a lot of money. And if they're, and I don't want them to like charge me for it. But apparently, they're just saying it won't cost them much money. It's just a little low tech thing. From my perspective, it's like, yeah, you can look them up and find them, whatever. But just the convenience and ease, it's just the same as how much I appreciate Apple sending out super high res versions of the album cover. I like that. So I don't know. I like it.
Okay.
I like when I buy an album on iTunes, it gives me the digital booklet of the album. I just bought some out. What did I buy? I can't believe I bought an album, some random band. What was it? I bought some album the other day, but it comes with a digital, oh God, that stupid buzzer. It comes with a digital booklet, essentially a PDF of what you would get in a CD. I like that.
Okay.
Oh, I know what I bought. I bought Wolf Mother.
Okay.
That Australian hard rocking band. It was kind of cool.
I'll say, my last thing that I'll mention before I'm done is a friend emailed me and said, oh, by the way, in terms of the kidney stones being presented in the media, and you had brought up the Deadwood thing.
Yep.
He brought up, I guess there was a Seinfeld where Kramer had a kidney stone and ended up screaming so loud like all of New York heard it. And I guess Phoebe was giving birth, and I guess Joy was having sympathy pains, but it turns out they were kidney stones. But I'd never seen that episode. So
it is a popular pop culture reference.
It's a
lit.
I will say it's a little more prevalent than I thought.
Yeah. But
anyway, so
I'll tell you that Deadwood, I have nightmares about that. That literally, Kramer would not have me nightmares. I would laugh, but Deadwood told me, "Oh my God, I never want to have that happen to me ever." It was beyond sickening.
No email this week to youguysrock@mustardamnas.com. So we have nothing to discuss there.
No. Nope. Dead space radio death. Nothing else going on.
Coincidentally enough, if you want to contact us, youguysrock@mustardayonnaise.com is the method by which to do so.
Is there any movies coming out next week we're going to be looking
for? I don't know. If Pan's Labyrinth ever opens in Seattle. Oh, yeah.
If it ever opens
nice.
In Seattle, I definitely want to see that. So, cool.
We're done. Thank you for listening. I'm Matt.
I'm Richard.
That's it.